Arlo.
Thank you. Deputy Commissioner, DPS, and co-chair of the Alaska Land Mobile Radio Executive Council. Go ahead and call this meeting to order here. Opening statements or anything like that before we do roll call?
Yes, I'd like to introduce Lieutenant Colonel Gladwell and see Deputy J6. He'll be sitting in for Colonel Mearstein today.
Okay, welcome, sir.
Thank you.
Welcome. Very good. Anything else?
So one thing, Mr. Yes. Chair.
So through the chair, everyone, this is Paul Fussy. Just like to introduce Penny Bortman. She started this week, and she will be taking over for Sherry once she retires. So,
okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you. Thanks, Paul, and thanks for being here. We're excited to be part of the team here. So.
Thank you.
Very good. Okay. As far as the roll call, Sherry, is that something that you're going to take care of for us?
Yes, sir.
All right. You could take the roll.
Okay, on the telephone, myself, Sherry Schaefer, Mr. Pete Rogel, Mr. Tim Tomitz, Mr. Zach Haas, Deputy Chief Alex Boyd, and Chief Michael Curl. Is there anybody else on the telephone whose name I have not called?
Mickey Craig. Flores, BK Technologies.
Mickey Flores, BK, thank you.
And Trigg is here.
Thank you, Trigg. Anybody else on the telephone? Okay, President Anchorage, so far that I know of, Mr. Paul Fussy, Ms. Penny Bortman, Deputy Commissioner Brian Barlow, and Mr. Tim Woodall. Is there anybody else, President Anchorage, whose name I have not called?
Yes, Sherry. Let's start with me, John Rockwell.
Thanks, John.
Jim Nichol, Motorola.
Thank you.
Herbert Gladwell, J6, Alcom.
Thank you.
Nick Vanstock, SML.
Thank you.
Scott Stolmo.
Thank you.
Mark Newman, Municipality, Anchorage.
Thank you.
David Reed.
Thank you.
And that's it, Sherry.
Okay, that completes the roll call.
Okay, thanks, Sherry. Sounds like we have the people we need and we have the numbers we need to continue on with the meeting. Next item on the agenda is approval of previous meeting minutes. I assume that everybody has a copy or was provided with a copy of the previous meeting minutes and has had a chance to review those. Any discussion items regarding those meeting minutes or comments, questions in the room or on the phone?
None from DOD.
Okay. Not seeing any. That being the case, can get a motion to approve the meeting minutes as written from the October 19, 2023 Executive Council meeting.
Alex Boyd, motion to approve.
Thank you, sir. Second?
Colonel Gladwell, seconds.
I second, yeah. All right, thanks, gentlemen. Meeting minutes from the October 19, 2023 meeting are approved. Moving right along to old business. I see the note here of the SIGBE issue tabled. Is that something that we still want to comment on or talk about? Or
there's no comments on it right now, sir. The as you know, new legislative session just started, and so we'll see how this year goes. Whether we'll pull it off in the very near future or see if we could make another run of it. We'll, kind of keep up with what's going on.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. So it's still tabled at this time.
Okay. Very good. Questions about that? Seeing any. Next item B, long-term cost share solution. John?
And again, no updates for this meeting, sir.
Okay. I guess just a general, as we're going through these items, we've got a number of items on here to follow up on in terms of old business. It should be pretty quick, but if somebody has questions or comments or anything, just speak up so I don't have to be a broken record and ask anybody if they have questions. fiduciary responsibility documentation, next item, Mr. Woodall.
Yes, sir. We are still working that. One of the milestones is the life cycle management plan that we're expecting from Motorola. That will be briefed under new business today.
Yeah.
So that is part of that. And that will help us move along.
Okay. Radio inventory, Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So good afternoon, everyone. So at the end of the year here, I went through and thank you to Mr. Nick for getting a spreadsheet for me. I sent out email to all of our members what radios they have that are FDMA and TDMA per their serial number. We did get a nice upgrade through Genesis that we can now see when radios are transmitting in TDMA. So instead of just guessing their serial number, we can actually see them transmitting, if they're transmitting FDMA or TDMA, which is really good. At the end of the year, nobody saw the newsletter. There were 9,729 TDMA radios on the system and 16,081 non-TDMA radios were on the system. So we're making progress getting over the TDMA cutoff on that one, but all those emails were sent out. So that's been taken care of, Mr. Chair.
Everybody is well aware of the deadlines associated.
Yes, correct. And with the email that I sent out, I did attach the subscriber request so they can send it into Nick's office and my help desk to have those removed. And then also we did get several follow-up emails from individuals asking about the radios, which ones are approved. So I actually attached the approved list to the email it went out to each and every member.
Okay. People know what they can buy.
Yes.
All right, super. People are making progress then. Very good. We'll check on that. It's kind of a big deal thing. Anyone on the phone or in the room, additional concerns or comments on that?
The only additional comment, sir, is in the user committee minutes, I was going to mention it then, but since it's very relevant now, in the Alaska Land Mobile Radio user group meetings, we've been talking a lot about the TDMA versus, you know, FDMA, the move forward of the fact that we're reminding everybody that when they do upgrade a radio, that doesn't mean they just keep their old radio in the closet, that we need to, you know, have those radios removed from the system. And it's a very simple process through, you know, basically you can start with even calling the help desk if they don't know what else to do.
Yeah.
And so it's imperative that we not only encourage them to upgrade the radios, but also remove the old radios, because, you know, even when we go live on, you know, say the day, you know, say it's January 1st, 2027, whatever that day that we're like, we want to flip that switch, we're still not precluding FDMA radios. We're just going to be very discouraging, I guess I want to use that word very loosely.
Increasingly discouraging.
We're going to increase increase the pain level as we move forward to encourage them not to keep those radios on the system. And so it's been, you know, a lot of talk about budgets, as you can imagine.
Yeah, and people are just working through that. They're working through the budgetary cycle issues associated with larger expenditures, especially for smaller.
Yeah, exactly. So I know that DOD, you know, thought that they had put in a large sum of money this year, that when the governor's budget finally came out, it was not there. So they're scrambling to see what they can do, whether it's a supplemental budget or what have you.
It's always exciting.
Always.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. Next item regarding the AML for Alaska Municipal League. Mr. Woodall, Mr. Fusty, anything to add on that?
Through the chair. I was working with the Alaska Municipal League. I've been sitting through a lot of their meetings, making inroads with their contacts and that. On November 21st, I let Colonel Meerstein and Mr. Woodall know that Fairbanks North Star Borough, they rejoined the AML. So they had a meeting and they rejoined the Alaska Municipal League. Pending any further questions, respectfully request that this one, this item be get closed out. They're now part of the AML again.
Okay. Any other comment on that at all?
No comment.
All right. Look at that. Look like we did something. Mark jumped off the list. For the record, that was all Paul Fussy.
Good job.
So, recognition for Kevin. So, okay. Thanks, Paul. I appreciate the update on that. You remember, I know this is serious, but I struggle to be serious sometimes. I'm getting better at it. Next item regarding the bi-directional amplifier Rabinowitz Courthouse in Fairbanks. You know, that's something I was going to ask about. But
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
So through the chair, as Paul would say. You know, we have continued on the engineering work. There were some issues with funding in the beginning, but I asked for them to utilize some of the current RSA monies, since we often have RSA monies left over to do the engineering work and get that project started. I don't have an update at this point on where they are, but I believe the equipment has been ordered. Scott, do you have any additional information on the BDA for Fairbanks?
That's not my understanding. Is there isn't any funding for it, and I'm not aware that we've been doing any further action on that.
Okay, I'll have to follow up on that because I know I gave your staff the go ahead to get the engineering work done through the RSA funding, and so I'll have to.
So yeah, we'll follow up on that. Let's follow up on that, and then if they're beyond the engineering. I don't know what that funding source can sustain as far as that and how applicable it is for equipment purchase and stuff like that. I've been looking at different funding sources. You know, I know that a few meetings ago or a couple meetings ago, I brought the topic to bear with a fair amount of ignorance in terms of a potential funding source regarding maintenance monies and whether or not that could be utilized as a whole or a partial funding source for this effort here, this necessary effort. I don't know, and I admittedly I missed a meeting, and so I don't know if it was decided that hey, that's not an appropriate funding source for that. And part of my discussion today was going to be to ask that again. And if it's not, fair enough. And I'm looking at other funding sources right now. You and I can talk, I guess, offline on that, if we need to, and determine how far this RSA money you're talking about is going to go, and where the additional funding. I think I have something else identified that can help bridge any gap in funding.
And as I understand, for the record, the RSA money was to continue the engineering process, not ordering the equipment.
Okay.
And so we're just waiting for the additional funding.
And that's where I can come on board. I working with the department statewide admin services director on the appropriateness of a funding source. I think I actually misworded an email asking whether or not it was I may have implied that I was asking as to whether or not it was appropriate funding source and through historical use of it, I know that it's a funding source. So I probably have to have a follow-up conversation to say, I'm using this to purchase some things and whatnot,
right,
and see what the feedback is so that we can move forward sooner than later. I don't think that we're going to have to wait through a legislative process to obtain further funds to get it. It's becoming kind of a bit of a primary issue that the troopers and court service staff and other emergency folks cannot talk on MMR inside of the courthouse in Fairbanks. That should be observed as or seen as a primary issue.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Okay, fair enough. We can talk offline on individual funding sources.
Perfect.
Then. Anything, questions on that or further comment? Motorola operations service contract, services contract. Mr. Stormo?
There's been some turnover on procurement, so we've, that's put it on hold for the moment and not concerned with the timing yet. So just need to re-engage with procurement and get the DOD and us together to talk with them about the strategy to go forward.
Our procurement processes typically move pretty quick, so should be ready to go.
It can. It took a long time. Last time.
I tried to keep that laugh in.
Yeah. Sorry. And that's not inferring anything for, I guess, those folks. They have a busy shop and whatnot. But anyways.
And just for general knowledge, the contract will have to be renewed in 26. Okay. And we are, Scott and I have had discussions with validating requirements, expanding coverage, identifying areas off of the past contract where we run into issues. Mm-hmm. So we're getting those together, and we'll address those, and then see how that all comes out. But as you know, the important thing is to get the contract officer on board and find out the procedure they want to follow. Last time when we did the contract, it was under a Arizona State University pilot program. Is that right, Scott? I think it's, yeah. So it was a different process that we undertook. We don't know if it's going to be the same procurement process this time or not. So.
Okay.
It was very interesting, yes.
Yeah, those things when they're new and unusual, they take time to work through. Admittedly, that's probably appropriate. Okay. Very good. Tudor Road electrical work.
This has basically been put on hold for the moment. When we ran into the hiccup of they were going to have to kill power the whole building for a while, and they hadn't got the information back from Chugach Electric as to what was entirely going to need to be done on their side. So what we have been doing, because the UPS system that's back in our zone controller has still been functioning fine, but it has batteries that are about 8 years old, and they're 3-year-old battery life cycle. So they're way past what they should be. So we've looked at, and I think I mentioned it before, but we've had two or three different vendors come in and give us ideas what needs to happen, and every one of them had an absolutely polar direction on what had to happen.
Oh, that confidence building, yeah.
Right. Jeez. So we are, we've been working with Motorola as one of the options under our $24 million contract to kind of have them redesign a power system for us back there. And the intent then is to take that design and go out to bid to get that, or use the NASPO contract to get that upgraded to make sure that's all new and fresh before we would run a chance of having any power cut off to the building. So I don't think any of this will probably even have a chance of coming back up till spring or summer.
Okay. So, it's, yeah, more time on that. And so out of forgetting or out of not being there for these discussions, I'm gathering they're insinuating that the power is not going to be available to the building for an extended period of time.
And they couldn't tell us how long when we asked. So it's an upgrade to stuff that we're doing to the building, so it's only impacting our intent to move forward on those fixes. So we've been trying to get power out to the backyard, basically. We have shelters set up out there that we train and troubleshoot in, and we got connexes that need lights in it. Probably security camera that should be out there on a pole watching the area. So it's been an issue that we have never had power out there. We finally were making headway to get power out there. And then as it got deeper into it, they started finding out these other things they had to change for the building. So it started off as an easy thing to do, and as like most things, it's gotten far more difficult as we progressed along. So we're not hurting anything by waiting at the moment. So we'll wait until we're confident we can do it. And I think, as the Colonel mentioned last time, that anytime you do big things with power, no matter how confident you are, something's going to go wrong. So
that's the constant.
Yeah.
Right there. Plan for what you can, anticipate for what you can, and be ready for that thing or things to happen that you didn't see coming.
Yep, I'll have my letter of resignation. I'll draft it up.
Oh, my gosh.
Our offer stands, continues to stand. We have a couple bring down and support if needed.
So the insinuation is days?
No, it's probably hours, but they couldn't say it, so.
Okay. Okay. Well, and thank you.
Just to be clear, I just think the people were tired of the time couldn't say, they will say before we decide to go forward. They just haven't got that deep in it with the engineers for them to say how long it has to be off. So it was the electricians that were here doing the work, and that wasn't something that they could commit to how long it would have to go. So
further, I don't want to get too far off, but you talked about the emergency battery power backup. Batteries being well beyond life expectancy. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, out of new guy ignorance, is that something we're working on, or is that an outdated system?
That's what we're working with Motorola Engineering, okay. Get us a new modern solution. Unfortunately, that was a new modern solution about 6-7 years ago.
And one of the points we were making in our discussions concerning the new contract is trying to get those backup battery systems into the PMI maintenance and replacement part of the
schedule,
maintenance
regular
contract
schedule.
We have, because DOD has the same type of battery plants, and we don't have a contract to support them. So when they're going out, you have to go through the process. It's not responsive enough. So something we need to get covered under the contract with a good response.
Yeah, and as Scott pointed out, sir, right now, we can just go and replace batteries in most of our power plants, but at the same time, there's newer technology, newer batteries, newer controls. And so you always want to look at if you're going to have to swap things out, we bite the bullet and upgrade it to the newer technology. And that's one thing that I appreciate Scott and his staff looking at this one here, right? It's not just the shelter that we have to, go up and swap out the technology of the batteries. But this is one that, we rely on as far as the whole system in this area.
And this is equipment that we can't service. It's high voltage electrical stuff, and we don't have electrician stuff. We can do the battery plants at a regular RF site, but we can't touch that stuff. So we've got to get the contractor to come in and do it. As the meeting might remember, they had a contractor working on their UPS system a few years ago, and they got a bunch of stuff repaired in their master site due to the power surge that happened during that process. So
that's part
even the professionals can get things go wrong on them. So
Well, we'll endeavor for that type of exciting stuff not to happen here, and we'll keep it boring and update our systems without.
Yep.
Light shows. Okay.
The 80 batteries, or how many?
Roughly 80 batteries, 20 per bank.
That's a big lift.
Significant. Yeah. What's what would be the lifespan if the batteries were running at 100%? What kind of lifespan on power supplies are supposed to provide?
The newer one we're looking for engineering. Motorola is designing it to do at least 8 hours. So.
Okay.
And that's going to still be two big battery plants. So.
Okay. Fair enough. Significant issue, but it sounds like it's still being worked. So, any other questions, comments, input on old business items that we've gone through today? Nobody in the room, nobody on the phone? Fifth item, user council update.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I already mentioned one of the biggest topics that we've been discussing in the user council is the TDMA upgrades of the radios, along with some of the little smaller things like, talk group sharing and agreements and such. As far as the makeup of the committee, we are going to be down to, we have Chris Martin retiring, the DOD, and then Heath Scott retiring from the Southeast representative. I don't know if we've gotten a letter yet from Eielson.
We have not.
We have not. Okay. So that is pending, and then we are still waiting for someone to volunteer for the Southeast as far as the Southeast rep. So we're looking for that.
Okay.
Quick update, that's it.
Okay. Right. Anything for John? Any questions for John Rockwell on this topic? Okay. Paul?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we'll start out with training and outreach. So Dan Nelson's been very busy, and we have two new training video vignettes were posted on the website in November. They are the ALMR system upgrade, how will it affect me, and also contingency planning for ALMR members. There is a new video, the advanced radio features was posted in December, and then just last week, the emergency button procedure was posted out on the website. So we're getting a lot of questions from individuals. We have our emergency button program, where does it go, how does it set up, and they actually go through and set up an MOA with the dispatch centers, in which dispatch center is going to answer their emergency button. So that's why we created that video there. So that's out on the website now. As previously discussed under old business, the emails for TDMA and FDMA went out to all our user members on there. Also, Motorola presented a presentation to user council December 6th, protecting public safety dispatch centers from cyber attacks. And they also talked about the new CJIS criminal justice information system requirement for dispatch centers. Astro dispatch console, CAD systems, and then the also the new mandates. So before the user council meeting, I worked with Joe Pixa to set it up. A really good representative. She works with our cybersecurity team, and I invited all the dispatch centers to the user council meeting of that one to listen in on that. But really good information with the new CJIS requirements for dispatch centers. Went over and we had a joint meeting at the Alaska Rescue Coordination Center and Civil Air Patrol to look at options. They're looking to their motor bridge is no longer supported. They're looking at what equipment they can have to put on there. So they're still using their motor bridges to talk to the helicopters here and then also up at Allison. So it was a really good meeting with some companies there. Nick and I attended to go through there and help them out on that one. So being proactive on that one, looking for what they can do to replace their motor bridges. Also, we were approached by NOAA Weather, what we can do for them, how we can help them with their radios. So myself, Nate from the ASPS, and then Scott from SCOC went over there and talked and met with them at their headquarters there off of Sand Lake, looking at what they can do for their ALMR radios. So SCOC will be helping them with some ALMR radios on that one. So very, very good meeting on that one. And then in November, I went up to Fairbanks, and then I conducted a Zone 2 master site inspection. And then in also the offsite storage for zone 2. So it's required to be done at least once a year. I do it once a month down here for zone 1, but I'll be doing it quarterly going up and making sure that the offsite storage and backup is being done properly and then going up and taking a look at the master site for zone 2. While I was up there, I also stopped in and visited with Fairbanks Dispatch, Erica. On some of the issues they've been having with the reporters up there.
Okay.
And then I met with Captain Spitzer and Lieutenant Rogers once up there also. We talked about the radio systems and just get a visual with the Pega Road Tower up there too.
Any issues getting on to Fort Wainwright at the Birch Hills?
No, I just used my retired card.
Okay.
So no problem there. Thank you though for asking this morning.
Everything looked good?
Yes, it did, sir.
Okay. Has that power thing been fixed up with that?
The battery plant.
Yep.
Like it was only on A side or B side, right?
Yep. So that I was told by Mr. Perry that has been updated and fixed because when I had heard before, there was still extension cords running everywhere. So that's why I went up there and wanted to actually take a look at the building and look at it inside there. Then I took multiple pictures of it in there too. I could send those over to you, Mr. Stormo. But yeah, the inspection went really well. The building looked good. So
Public Works corrected that.
Yeah,
safety hazard.
Yep. No, it was very clean. Looked really good inside the building there. So,
right.
So any questions on the training and outreach before I move on? Hearing none, I'll move forward. So the project status update. So TDMA was not turned on in 2023 due to installation of the Juniper routers not being completed. I'll be working on that in the springtime. At the latest check, the FedRAMP approval was not received. We're delaying the Smart Connect and the location on Push to Talk. What we're being told that is still being worked on, but as of today, we do not have FedRAMP approval. So looking at the final FY24 membership agreement, the agreement from the FBI was received on November 30th. We ended up working with some folks from California on that one, getting that signed off. Also, with the AFEA representation, because the FBI is not no longer being, no longer wants to represent through AFEA, they're going to be holding their quarterly meeting on February 1st. They sent me the invite, so I'll be sitting on that one for February 1st. And they're going to be discussing electing a new representative to the ALR Executive Council through the AFEA. So that'll be February 1st. Hopefully, I'll have an answer for that one. And I'll update that one as we go through. Any questions before I go to the metrics?
Yes, sir.
Yes, Mr. Woodall.
I was going back to the Motor Bridge. Does the state still have an active set server?
There's the ones functioning down here, right? The one in Fairbanks, not.
Yeah, Fairbanks is also, so the emergency response center out of Jaybear is connected to the SIT server, correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right. And then the second just for general confirmation, the cooperative agreement, mutual aid agreement, is on the gentleman's desk for signature. So we should be getting that back to you probably, hopefully, by the end of this week, so that you can continue to process it for signature.
Thank you, Mr. Woodall. That's good news. So we'll go to the December metrics on here. We'll take a look as you can see through the year there. But in December, for the calls, we had 2,393,082. Sorry, I do apologize. I have my numbers backwards. The push to talk and my call numbers were backwards. I do apologize for that. So the calls were 1,478,785. And the push to talks were 2,393,082. I apologize for that. Monthly busies were 484, but once again, if you take a look at those numbers, 0.0003%, very, very small. Our subscriber counts were 25,810, and the sites below 39 were 7. And if we take a look at the sites that were below 39, Bailey Hill, Beaver Creek, Girdwood, Peyton Pass, Pillar Mountain, Kellogg and Woman's Bay. So some of them were PMIs and Nick's team was going out and doing their maintenance as always. Girdwood, if anybody was not familiar, we had a huge storm come through, a lot of power issues. And then that has been rectified, correct, Mr. Stormel, for Girdwood?
It is with a temporary power line. So there's more to be done to make that permanent.
Thank you, Mr. Stormo.
And Mr. Fussy, if I could interrupt, I do want to give kudos to Scott and his team for Girdwood. They did an amazing job in a tight time frame, but a lot of hurdles that they had to jump through. Good job, Scott. I know that it's temporary right now. The power line is above ground. When it melts, we don't know what we're going to have to do with it, whether we have to bury it, whether we have to do whatever. Also within BPS procurement, we have James's last name.
Rowe.
Pardon me?
Rowe.
Rowe, working on any permits that we might have to have in the future to go in and bury that. think he's still looking for an exact XY location, Scott. I did not ask you for that yet. That's one thing he asked me for. So he can make sure that he's talking with the right owners of the property. But good job, Scott.
Thank you. Any questions from anyone on the metrics? Moving on to the other items. So to finish up my report, so December 6th and 7th, Nick and I came in early with his team and they are office. We conducted the quarterly zone control rollovers, installed the security patch updates, and Mr. Newman also from A1. Thank you, sir. December 11th through the 15th, the ALMR office conducted Genesis system upgrade. Once again, like Ed mentioned earlier, this upgrade will now allow us to identify TDM radios. There's a lot of other advancements on there. We can see how many radios are affiliated to the towers on there, and it helps us take a look to see if there's a possibility of that tower being overloaded on there with the system. Each tower has a different colored ring on it. Try not to steal Nick's thunder on there, but a lot of good things with the Genesis upgrade that was being beneficial for us. Also, the quarterly newsletter was mailed out and posted on the website on January 15th. And for those who are not familiar, we sent out a digital copy. Also, we print out the hard copy, and that goes to each individual legislature. So I mail it out to each individual legislature down in Juneau, and also our federal representatives in D.C. get a copy of that newsletter. We do have a new AFBA president. Was elected Ms. Jocelyn Fenton. She went ahead being very proactive, and she went and signed the outstanding non-DOD membership agreements that were out there, the EC charter, and the cooperative and mutual aid agreement. So with the new president there, she's been very proactive with ALMR, which is really nice. So it helped on a lot of the stuff that we were struggling to get signed off on. Unfortunately, this is Sherry's last EC meeting. Our replacement sitting next to me, Ms. Penny Portman. Penny just started on January 15th, so a couple of weeks with that one. But unfortunately, Sherry is retiring, so she'd be sorely missed. I cannot stress that enough. She's been wonderful to work with and a lot of help to me, boots on the ground. So there are three annual reports that go to the executive council after the UC approves them. So there are some folks that still need to sign these reports. Sherry sent out emails on them as a friendly reminder, but for the folks that have not signed these yet, please do so. They are the 2023 business case, the OMO 2023 annual information assurance audit report of findings, and the user council 2023 annual assessment of system operations and management performance. If you have not signed that, please do so so we can close those out. Also, as another friendly reminder, the monthly modem patch was completed in January here. So please reboot all your window clients if you've not already done so. We get the report through there, and with that modem patch, if you have not restarted or reset your window client, you're not going to have that new security patch on there. So please do so. It's imperative for our system. That completes my report, Mr. Chair, pending any questions.
No one in the room, anyone on the phone, questions of Paul? All right, again, for the record, Brian Barlow here. Sherry, I'll just second Paul's comments there that wish you all the best in retirement, and thank you very much for all of your hard work and service here. I know that in the little bit of time I've been part of this endeavor here, you organize and run a tight meeting, and so it's fantastic to work with you, and I thank you very much for everything. So hopefully you're going to go enjoy a very well-deserved retirement. So thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Absolutely. Moving on, new business. We have one item listed on there for new business, and it's a Motorola briefing.
Let me give you a preamble to that.
Okay.
One of the issues that we see long term is our inability to have a long term financial planning process in place, understanding what our out year costs are, and trying to look out on a 10-year cycle. For DOD, we use the budget in a 5-year type cycle, and I know with the state it would be helpful to be able to view further out with regard to when upgrades are required, what the cost of the contract is going to cost, and when we're going to have end of life to equipment. So we can have a system upgrade, but that upgrade can occur just by software and not include end of life equipment that we have to replace. So we needed a better picture, a more thorough picture of the cost projections on the out year. So we asked Motorola to get together on both the state and federal side of the government planners on their side and give us a picture of what our life cycle costs would be, not only from a maintenance perspective, life cycle and sustaining upgrade perspective. So this will be a consolidated look at a very high level of what that looks like. Some of the changes that we'll be looking at currently, our life cycle upgrades are happening on a 3 to 5 year basis, where we have to go out and ask for a very large amount of money to complete an upgrade that is required to keep up with the technical upgrades that the systems go through. So Motorola maintains support of a system for about 5 technology iterations. And if you're behind in your upgrades, which we have been, we typically are getting an upgrade and then only have 2 years before the 5-year period for that technology level is extended, and then we're having to fight for funds. So we would like to switch that model to a system upgrade model that is done on an annual basis. And so they'll explain what that is and what that cost look like. Typically, and I don't know this for a fact, hopefully they'll relay that to us, but in the past, when we had looked at it, it was about 15 to 17% cheaper to do it annually than it was to do it every 3 to 5 years. In other words, the cost for would be cheaper on the long run. And when you're talking millions of dollars, 15 to 17% is worth the money. So unless Scott's got anything to add to that, we'll turn it over to Motorola.
No, wait and see what Motorola says.
Same old comments. So.
Good afternoon, all. I'm Zach Hess. I'm the federal account manager for DOD for Alaska. Mr. Paul Fussman, could you possibly share the document provided earlier today?
I will pull that up. I didn't know if you wanted to use the screen for 1 second. I'll share my screen here again real quick.
Okay, thank you. Sherry, appreciate it.
No worries, Mr. Haas. Sherry, can you see my screen?
Yes.
There we go.
This one, Mr. Haas?
Yes, correct. Thank you. So as Tim already alluded to, we've been working with myself on the DOD side, and then Joe Picks on the state side has been working with Tim and Scott to create this lifecycle management plan. So that's what we've been working on this year. And these are the numbers that we're able to project out for that lifecycle management plan. And really what this is going to do is it provides a couple different benefits for the customer and you guys over or up there in Alaska at ALMR. And the best way to kind of show that is if you look at the 2005 cost projections, or excuse me, 2025 cost projections, whenever you do those upgrades 3 to 5 years, it takes a significant amount of labor and cost upgrade. And so as you can see, you know, post 2025 on this model, we're able to spread that cost out over multiple years with the new SUA model added to the maintenance model. And as Tim had already alluded to, that does save 15% annually as you project that out. It also provides, especially on the DoD side, the ability to better rely on compliancy and to keep that up to date. So, you know, on the DoD side of the network, we have stricter guidelines on how we actually protect and secure the data. So mapping that out and having that SUA involved as well, the software upgrade agreement, allows for those compliances to be maintained yearly rather than at each given upgrade, which benefits the DoD guidelines and helps to have a more safe network for the DoD side. Then also, this model will help in actually, you know, mapping out and, you know, planning for cost as they've already kind of alluded to, and to go towards a fiduciary agreement and be able to plan out cost modeling. So when you have a large upgrade, that can be difficult every 3 to 5 years coming up with all the money. The idea of this SUA is to alleviate that and give you guys at ALMR a more refined cost model, you know, for that 10-year life cycle. And that's all I really have from my end. Joe, do you have anything to add as far as the benefits of this model?
Well, first off, the main thing here is what Zach was and Tim were alluding to. If you look at those costs just on the state side, and you go from 2025 to 2031, you're looking at it's almost $30 million. Who wants to go to the legislature in 2031 and ask them for $30 million? It's a lot. It'd be a lot nicer to be able to say, okay, we know that it's going to be $1.6 million every year, and you can budget for it. And then you can plan for it just like you do for your maintenance contract today. And then one of the things that I wanted to point out also, there's a big difference between a system upgrade agreement, what we refer to as an SUA, and the maintenance contract. And we have these acronyms for everything, but I'd like to use an example to kind of say what's the difference between the two. So if you think about your maintenance, think of having a race car. You're going to maintain your race car. You've got to put oil in it. You've got to put water in it. You've got to change the tires. You've got to put new windshield wipers on it. All those things that have to be maintained today. And that's why Mr. Fussy said you've got a 0.0003 drop rate on your system. You can point over to your maintenance crew and say, yeah, these guys are doing the job. They're doing it right. The SUA, on the other hand, for that race car is more like replacing all the hardware and software that makes that thing hum every other year. So think of it like an engine replacement, not quite that extensive, but that's sort of the difference between the two things here. The maintenance is maintaining and keeping everything humming along. The SUA is bringing it up to be the fastest car you can have. Does that make sense? Pure silence.
Thank you, John. I've got a real quick question. When we talk about SUA 2 and then the maintenance services, we're maintaining constantly with this, but we're only upgrading to the next revision every other year. Is that correct?
Correct. In an SUA, you're taking an upgrade every other year. And one of the other things that we didn't really point out here in that every other year upgrade, that's an enormous amount of planning. Right. So our upgrade operations team, our jet team, they'll be in touch with the ALMR folks a year in advance, planning this whole upgrade so that we limit downtime and we don't make any mistakes. But it's an enormous process. It's not like we just, you know, buy an upgrade and we'll be there next week. It doesn't work that way. Whereas if we have this on a scheduled 10-year maintenance plan, the DoD and the state can work together. We'll bring in, you know, single points of contact from Motorola moving forward in the future for PMs, engineering, systems technologists, and we'll plan this out well in advance. But, you know, the way we're doing it today with Motorola, since I've been calling on State of Alaska since 2016, is the can kind of gets kicked down the road until it's one of those oh no moments, and we have to do something today, and then it's emergency to go to the legislature, and it's very difficult to find that money. Where if we could get this set up into an agreement between the DOD and the state, where you guys know exactly what you need to budget out over these 10 years, we won't have those emergency moments. It really will help you in the planning department.
I might add that, I know this is true on the DOD side, and it's probably true on the state side. The model where we have to go out and get capital funds to do upgrades on a 3 to 5 year basis is a more difficult process than if you could integrate the upgrade of the system along with the maintenance of the system based on an O&M basis, on an annual basis. So the idea that annually you're accounting for that and you're budgeting for it becomes part of your operations budget, and not necessarily having an operations budget here and a capital insert every 3 to 5 years. So it levels that out, it saves us money. And I think if we are able to get SUA written into the contract, then it's on a contractual basis. And therefore we're paying those funds on a contractual basis, and it's much easier to budget. I think long term we're not asking for, we're asking for the same amount over the same amount of period, a little bit less, but the same amount, but we're asking for less in every 3 to 5 year period.
Spikes.
There's no spikes, and I think that will help us to move along. So that's the change we make in our fiduciary responsibility and get a solid plan, get a good operations and maintenance budget laid in, and then project our costs long term so that we know exactly what's in front of us. And it would be much easier for us to line up all of the state, the federal, and the local government on meeting these cost requirements. So where we're having to wait 2 years to wait for another agency to come up with their money should be something we could correct.
So one note to go along with that, Tim. All three of the agencies essentially have to act as a single system. I can't upgrade the DOD and not the state. I can't upgrade MOA and not the DOD. So everybody has to line up at the same time, which adds to the predicament that we get into with, you know, one entity came up with their funding and the other one's going to wait 2 years, you know, and things of that nature. Whereas if we have an 8-year program, we don't have to worry about inflation. We don't have to worry about, you know, MOA having to go to the voters or the state going to the legislature or Tim going to Congress. So it really benefits everybody.
All right. Thank you. Any other comments, thoughts, questions?
Questions?
On the phone or in the room?
Yeah, just a comment or two, but one, we had so much stuff piled up on this $24 million project that we're doing right now that we're going into year four trying to get that done. So we're gonna get that done, and we're always going to have caused ourselves a problem of we're due to put another upgrade and we haven't finished the last upgrade. So that's back to what they were saying earlier about how having a SUA allows Motorola to be planning in the winter so they can show up in the spring and summer. They've ordered equipment. They can show up and do the work instead of, you know, in the state's case, we get a budget in July, we execute a contract maybe in August, can't do anything because now winter's about to be here. So it doesn't really work for Alaska to be, with our short construction season, to be trying to get to all of the sites that the state has. If doing it the capital approach, we're never going to be caught up and doing it in a smart way. It's always going to be reactive and desperate for weather openings and nobody getting sick and canceling trips and, you know, doors flying off of airplanes and stuff and people from getting here.
That doesn't happen, though.
Never. And just, and this is, I mean, I kind of know this answer, but I'll let Motorola say to it. How many of your, you know, federal and state customers who own Motorola trunk radio systems have SUA versus do the every so often capital upgrade?
So in the Pacific Northwest, every trunk system that we have in the Pacific Northwest has a SUA now. That would be Washington State Patrol, Pierce County, King County, Snohomish County, Spokane County, Thurston County, City of Tacoma, City of Portland, State of Idaho, State of Montana. Every one of them have a SUA in place right now with Motorola. They've ranged from a 12-year SUA all the way down to a 5-year SUA. Motorola is more reluctant to go out into 12, 15-year SUAs anymore because the product is changing so fast. And then, of course, we got bit pretty hard by inflation. So when we lock into this contract for those 6 years that you see there, that's a contract. Motorola will honor those dollars that are there. What you're seeing here today, these are budgetary numbers. We do it a little bit differently so that you can go out and find your funding, because inevitably what's happening is I redo it every year because we don't get funded. So what we're doing here is budgetary purposes, but if you actually put a contract in place, you would have a solid number there, and then we wouldn't have to worry about the inflationary bite. We never really had to worry about that until the last 5 years, but it's big now. When you're talking millions and millions of dollars to get a 9% or 6% inflation increase, it hurts.
On the DoD side, we see a lot of enterprise-level systems moving that direction as well. It's a little bit larger, whether you're the Air Force or Army. I know the ALMR system's a little bit different and unique in Alaska. So
the rest of the territory, which is California and Hawaii, all the Hawaiian islands that have Motorola, every four islands have systems, four of them have SUAs. And all of California, all of the big systems, LA, LAPD, San Francisco, SBRA, San Jose, San Diego, Orange County, ICI, they're all on SUAs. The other thing that an SUA is because whenever you make these skyrocketing jumps, it's more of a forklift. And like Scott said, it's a huge project where if we're doing an SUA upgrade every 2 years, sometimes we call them an agile upgrade because there isn't any new equipment per se. It's just more software. The other thing with cybersecurity, keeping the system up to date, because that's where Motorola is going to test. We're going to test all the patches. I mean, part of that SUS, security update services, we're testing the patches on a live system. Not your live system, but a live system. We just test all of the third-party patches. And the farther you get back, we stop testing back because the systems aren't there anymore. And we had to get an exception on the last time when you guys were still at 717. We had to get an exception to continue to do security patches. So again, it all comes full circle when you talk about security, the system, the hardware, and it levels it up. I think Tim Brandt, I don't know if he's on the phone, but he likes to say, you know, it's like changing a jet engine on an airplane while it's flying because the system has to stay running. The system still has to talk, even though we're making all these changes. And we've gotten quite good at it.
And there's other things that aren't on here that would benefit our system. For example, the DSR capability. If a zone controller gets disconnected from backhaul or it goes down because the power of the building is out, all the sites that were hooked up to Tudor Road would flip over to Fairbanks, and it would just be, you know, a 30-second or minute transition, and they'd all be back up and working again. There's, and in a place like Alaska where we have potential for some, you know, whether it's volcanoes or earthquakes or, you know, it's hard to get support here again because if stuff breaks, then it's not the perfect time of the year, and it's hard to get things fixed. So I think the more protections we could put into this system would be a positive. And I'm pretty, DSR is not in those prices, right? I'm not sure.
No.
That's something, you know, that we've talked about for quite a while. That would be very beneficial to the system.
So what we're looking for, from Scott Sinai's perspective, with regard to the upcoming contract, is a concurrence from the Executive Council to approach the contract from the SUA 2 concept, adding that to the requirement and working that as part of the 8-year contract that we would be bringing out of this process. We'd like the direction, go this way or if not, stay with the capital approach. Just do look at the maintenance approach. So we're really looking for the Executive Council's decision because we're multiple agencies that are infrastructure owners that would have to get the funding and follow the processes for this. So we would want the concurrence at the executive level to move down that path. So that's why we're bringing it up.
Thank you, Ted. This is John. One question I have just before we talk about the benefits of SUA, which I'm in agreement on. Contractually, if we use, we don't do the capital, but we just use our operating budgets, and we increase the operating budget for the APSCS to fund SUA and SUS. Contractually, we would normally do a one-year contract with 7 1-year renewals that would give you the 8 years. With that, we can't guarantee, though, that we're going to get the funding for year 2 or year 3 or year 4. What would be the risk level on the Motorola side if we broach it that way? If I can't give you an 8-year contract funded because of the mechanism that we fund.
Well, I mean, we typically put that language in, you know.
Subject to availability.
Yeah, subject to availability of funds. We typically put that in to it. A lot of times what we do with a multi-year agreement, say it's 6 years or 10 years, and the customer cancels in year 2. Well, there's usually a clock that says, well, you took the 2-year and you took the first upgrade and you got that at, you know, your $1 million rate because it was discounted. But since you didn't pull out the other 6 years, you owe us $250,000. There's usually a clawback, but there is also
The discount, Jim, you're correct. So the clawback, the discount is so you didn't fulfill your entire obligation. Therefore, you didn't deserve the 15% discount per year, so you owe us the 15% of the year 1 and 2 that you got.
Yeah.
So.
But you still have availability of funds clause in the contract.
So the risk is on the Motorola side is what I'm trying to put over on the table, not on the state side or the muni side or even DOD at this point. But I know DOD always looks at 10 years down the line.
Yeah.
And so you're already funding your 10-year.
Well, no, we don't. We fund annually. Congress's Defense Appropriation authorization. So, but typically, when a contract is in place, it's understood. Further, if it's ingrained in your operating budget, those sustainment costs are also understood because you're not going to go out of business because you're. Your chances of getting a capital budget infusion is far less than for you to sustain your operations. Now, you may see a degradation in your, you may see a cut in your operational budget, 10-15%. And in those cases, we can revisit the contract, examine requirements and reduce requirements that would cut back to match the cost reductions we would get from an operational cost perspective. So that's typically how that, and we've done that through the mm-hmm. history of this contract that we currently have in place. So nothing unusual with regard to contracts.
I'm sure that there are some SUA customer didn't fulfill. I know it has not happened in Territory A.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't had anyone cancel in the middle of it. Now we've had people that we made some adjustments. Mm-hmm. They got rid of a dispatch center. One of them went away. They consolidated. So we had to do some adjustments in the pricing over that time period. But we haven't had one. Like, you know. I know Joe and I worked together on a lot of 10-year mm-hmm. deals. Our appetite for 10-year deals back in 2012 to 2015 was much bigger. Our appetite now is about 6 years.
Yeah.
Due to inflation.
Yeah.
Due to
unpredictability of costs. Makes sense. I don't know if these models make sense. It's not surprising. It's not surprising for either side then, you know, you're getting into.
Yeah, I mean, it's not our old radio system anymore. It's a giant IT system with radios strapped to the side.
Yeah.
And IT systems are just constantly on the turn.
Upgraded.
So much more third-party content in today's Motorola systems, and I've been 36 years, than it was, 35 years ago.
Yeah.
Right. You just put a box on a mountaintop and talk for 10 years.
So the other issue, thinking about it from a DAS perspective, so we've got, the way that we do the contracts, we do the accounting as well, as the budgeting. So let's say that we agree that, okay, we want to push forward with what's going with a SUS and SUA, or maybe just the SUA, I don't know. We have to look at when we can do this. Now, our contract is, current 26. Contract is at 26.
So we have July of 26. So that's your fiscal year 27, correct?
Right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That means we'd have to make sure that start marketing this and get it ready by August.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons we wanted to get this budget right out in front of us.
Right. So between now and August to get it all mm-hmm. tightened up.
Well, and that's for the SUA up there in 25. Which budget is already out, you'll see there's $6 million for doing the upgrade to get us ready.
So if we're not able to do that, then that will move that.
Push it out of here.
And yeah. Move it to the right. So,
from the user tax perspective, we've seen this chart many times. You know, we've looked at it, and we've tried to push it forward. I think this is the closest we're getting to the actual discussion at the executive council, because normally what we do is we wrap it into the budget that we present forward to the executive council, and the executive council gets the budget and goes, I understand these numbers, but doesn't act on it. So what I'm hearing from the floor is that we'd like to have some type of a, not necessarily commitment, but at least a, how would you put
a concurrence that the direction we're going should be pursued.
Okay. Thank you. A concurrence from the executive council that we would like to push forward with this type of funding model.
Mm-hmm.
And again, based on a lot of work that's going to have to happen between now and August, and then it's just going to go into that machine and Juno on our side, and same thing for the Muni, and same thing for DOD, different times of the year, of course, but as we move forward.
Right.
So I don't know if we would need a motion or just a concurrence. Paul and Sherry, I'd be looking toward you to see if you want.
And is everybody here that needs to hear this? Talking about sounds like
continuation.
It could be something you want to go back and discuss and then bring back to next meeting.
You know, we've got calendar items or calendars that are being driven in budget cycles and whatnot, but maybe it's a topic of primary discussion in the April meeting to help make a decision so that we ensure that everybody's educated by that point and everybody's got the information to feel comfortable to make a decision.
I'm sure, DC, that, you know, you'd want to talk to, you know, your staff to see how would this work. Talk to Pam to say, okay, Pam, this is what they're proposing. This is something that we have the appetite to pursue.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, obviously those conversations need to be had. You know, these length of contracts, you talked about the structure, you know, a one-year contract was 7 renewals, you know, pending, you know, early cancellation clauses and costs. Those are not uncommon. Those are normal.
Mm-hmm. That's how the current maintenance contract is today. Right. Even though it's a 10-year agreement, mm-hmm. it's
structured like
yeah,
that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're given the work order every year.
Right. State contracting.
Yeah.
Making sure that was clear.
Yeah. Right. The state says pending.
Yeah.
The state says pending funding.
Yeah.
It's like they're saying, yeah, here's the payment. Here's the numbers out this far.
Mm-hmm.
10 years used to look good, but we're only going to go out 6 years because who knows what the cost increases are going to look like for operational stuff. So I think maybe that's something we put on the there's some work to do, some people to talk to get people you know, gauge comfort, answer questions, and sounds like we have a meeting agenda item for April here.
Thank you, sir.
That works. Sound decent. Knowing that it's an important issue to continue to push.
Yeah, it would give us direction on how to go forward with the new contract, with the requirements, with the process.
Given budget timelines and how things work and length of time it takes, there's some urgency to keep it moving. Okay. What else on that topic?
So I think we should work on trying to refine this sheet then so it is close to like final, because I think it's worth, even if it's optional stuff, putting DSR on that.
Agreed. Yeah. And get more refined. In
cost, as close as possible to what it looks like with price points and things of that nature. So again, so true decisions can be
right. Right.
And I think one thing we're still missing is end of life. End of life equipment that needs to be replaced. It has to be identified because again, if we're going to go out and advertise or go out and say, hey, here's how much it costs us to run ALMR. We don't want to come along later on and say, oh, by the way, we have to replace GTRs because now they're gone in the year 2029.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll say, well, why didn't you ask for that? Why didn't you budget for that?
Anticipating
as much another,
as possible.
Yeah, it's another thing we've asked Motorola to give us so that we
but you see it in the console memory.
I do. Yeah.
Right.
It's more refined so we understand where that falls.
Right. You've got the console migration, you've got the workstation, you know, the radios, you've got all that. But
yeah, avoiding surprises. We like to see everything that may possibly need to occur using the sharpest pencil possible.
And on that mindset, I want to point out what should be maybe not obvious to everybody, but this is one rack of equipment in a site that has about 5 or 6 more racks of equipment that has nothing to do with those dollars. So there's a huge, the tower, the shelter, the generators, the battery plant, the microwave, the alarm system,
mm-hmm.
all of these other things, this is not up there. And we don't have resources, the DOD doesn't, the state doesn't have resources applied to maintain that stuff. That's why we end up in situations with UPSs on a master site that the batteries are probably 4 years past when they should be. And our Norse battery plant doesn't work.
Those are some things we want to address in as part of the requirements in the contract. And we want to hopefully be able to project those costs. We're putting spreadsheets together that will break down those sites, all of those items that are currently covered, that need to be covered, to make sure they get put in. So there'll be a lot of cost refinement, but it's necessary. Otherwise,
those of us that have been around long enough kind of understand that. But what happens a lot, I can't tell you how many times I've given the contract, redacted contract to somebody in the military that says, we pay Elmar to take care of that. Why are you telling me to come cut the alders out of the waveguide they're punching into the towers? That's Elmar's business.
Not part of.
And you can't expect people to know that because they don't live this every day, so they don't know who's responsible for what.
That's a good point. We're talking about dads. We're talking about other people that it may be more common knowledge in this room and on the phone, but some of the folks that we'll be talking money to.
Right. I just gave you $24 million for
didn't that include new towers? What do you mean you've got rusty towers out there, Scott?
And that's
82 of them? Wait a minute here.
The goal is it's way outside of their normal thing, and they're talking, radio thingies. And they don't know. They shouldn't really. They shouldn't know, really.
No.
They can't know everything.
Right.
So
it's
up to us to educate them on the.
Well, we have to do a better job of being able to identify those costs and at least project them. Sometimes you don't know if something's going to break or you don't.
Yep.
But you do. You can predict and know end of life of equipment. And then we can add PMIs to the requirements that these things that like battery plants be looked at so that we be maintained from a better perspective so that either we get longer life out of them or that we'll know when we'll have enough projection of when they're going to go and be able to
it's budget. Living and learning and realizing all the things that we need to include in it. And when we put everything in there,
it looks,
and the initial number makes people go, but what's worse is surprises and costs that get added on in year three or four because that weren't initially anticipated.
And what might be helpful is that we go back and put the numbers together, what we paid over the last 10 years or 5 years, and then show what it was costing. And if we can show any savings, I'm not over going to this process, then that might be helpful as well.
Understand.
So,
okay.
And sometimes you have to use pictures.
You do.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Helpful. Thank you. Any inputs or comments or questions from others in phone land?
So from a Motorola standpoint, we'll just kind of stand down till the next meeting and see what you come back with between Scott and Tim as far as any additional to-dos for us. But it sounds like we'll start marching towards the June-July timeframe and then perhaps incorporating a maintenance SUA into a single agreement.
Having those conversations between now and the April meeting. So this is refined and maybe ready to, turn into the ALMR's budget.
Yeah, Zach, I think both on the DOD and the state side, we need to meet with you guys again, look at refining numbers, getting some better projections on end of life and being able to better display. But this is a very good step, but we want to get a little bit more refined.
Absolutely.
And there's got to, we've got to have two versions of this. I can already tell because either we're getting $6.294 million in the FY25 budget, or this chart needs to be updated to what needs to happen in FY26 budget.
Right.
Absolutely, yeah. We're definitely already behind a year.
Okay.
And it may be looking at alternatives, maybe, I don't know the possibility, but extending the current contract a year to allow us to get the money to do the upgrade to move to SUA, or executing a contract with SUA, coming in on year two of the contract or something like that. We would have to know because we have to do this upgrade before we can get into the SUA model. So that will be part of the planning process, be part of the requirements. A lot of discussion we'll have to have internally within DOD and state level and local government level with regard to can we tolerate the funds infusion that's going to be required to do this, and how many years out is that? And then again, the complexity of aligning all those dollars at the same time frame, which hopefully this new approach would eliminate that in the future, which seems to be one of the most difficult things we face every time we have to upgrade the system, and also creates us working with older technology much longer, and then getting less out of the new technology that we get put in place, because then we have to move to the newer technology. We didn't get the full lifespan of that technology. We're only getting 2 years out of it where we could have got five.
Right, and some real examples of that is state and locals bought NCC 75s, halfway through their life cycle. So we'll be replacing those in 29. We bought, Motorola hasn't said when the GTR is going away, but we have bought GTRs well into their life cycle.
Yes.
So that was very expensive, and we didn't get to use it, for a full 20 to 30 years.
Getting up their life cycle gives us more bang for our dollars.
Sense.
I think those are all things we can explain to the people who do the funding, and so they understand that. But we have to do our job in being able to express it properly and make help them to understand why we would take this approach.
I honestly think there needs to be a marketing effort, though, that's combined with DOD, state, and Muni. To go in front of legislators to actually be successful with this. I think about the letter that came from DOD to the legislators, and it's like, we must do, it's like all of a sudden they go, oh, we got a letter from him. Yeah, we'll do it. it's like, okay, we've been telling you that we need to do this for 2 years now.
DC Boyd, did you have a question?
I wanted to reiterate, I think the last couple of minutes conversation has been very valuable. The impact on the users and any financial resourcing that's going to have to come at the user end is going to be very helpful for us, I think, in April, if we have just a ballpark of that, so we know what we're approving. I think on the surface and functionally, balanced budgeting is very, very good. If we can balance that out instead of the peaks and valleys of cost management, is an excellent pathway. But I think the questions I'm already getting from folks that are pinging me on any kind of budget element is, okay, how much is it going to cost now? So any of that information that we can share and say this is a standard consistent budget number that we can run with, rather than peaks and valley finances, that's a good thing. So just reiterate what was just said and appreciate those coming up.
Okay. Thanks, sir. I appreciate it. Yeah, I think that's what we're working towards having here soon. Okay. Anything else? Last call. There's nothing else on the new business agenda. That's it. Next item would be next meeting. I kind of alluded to that. Everybody's got the agenda. April 18th, 1:30 p.m. In this room right here, or on the phone. Minus that, I think we've covered everything, and we can move towards a meeting adjournment. I don't know that guy Roberts very well, and his rules are kind of funky, but sometimes they look for a motion to adjourn the meeting. And so if there's a...
And if you don't have a motion, you can't use the gavel.
Well, we need a motion, man, because I've got to use this thing today. Drill's always getting... Airstein's always getting...
Motion to adjourn the meeting.
Okay, a second.
Alex Boyd, second.
Alex Boyd, thank you. So, the January 18th, 2024 meeting
The ALMR Executive Council is adjourned.
Excellent. Thank you, sir.
That's not weak. That was weak.
I do.